Joe Owens, welcome to the podcast called Real Estate and Beyond.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you so much for coming. I am very thrilled to have you, and you are one of the very few offers that I've had on this show.
Ooh, okay.
So for everybody to know, Joe has written the book, The Rockstar Real Estate Agent, among other books, but this is the book we are focusing on today, The Rockstar Real Estate Agent. Now, it's no coincidence that this is called The Rockstar Real Estate Agent, and that has a little bit of something to do with your past, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I worked in the music business for 25 years and was really fortunate. I mean, I was like the king of right place at the right time because I started with sort of small bands and record labels and in a relatively short amount of time ended up working with the Rolling Stones, David Bowie, Bruce Springsteen, Michael Jackson, everybody. And, in the capacity generally of their live shows and traveling events. But I also did sponsorship things for them, you know, the Rolling Stones and Budweiser and all that kind of stuff. Was PR guy, was syndicated television broadcast, pay-per-views, those kind of things. So I got to know and got to see firsthand how they do what they do and why they're successful. And felt that there's a real application for that for agents.
So you recognize a rock star when you meet one, basically.
You kind of do. And it's primarily because they have found their niche. They found their thing. And they find a niche. They perfect it. They use it to attract fans. And then they leverage it to have a lifelong career. You would never mistake Metallica for Justin Bieber. You wouldn't even mistake Madonna for Lady Gaga, and they're the same person, essentially. Everybody is unique, and they cling to that uniqueness, and they do everything they can to use that as being special, expanded slightly. So when they make a new album, they want to do something slightly new, but never so much that they're going to alienate their fans. U2 went too far with Zooropa. Just went a little bit too far, and the fans are like, eh. We'll give you this one, but don't mess it up. Same thing with when Steve Tyler and Aerosmith decided to rap. I have no idea who thought that was a good idea. but the same thing. You know, the fans are forgiving, but not that forgiving. It's also why rock stars treat their fans like gold. They're very careful about what they do. They're very concerned about how they react to the paparazzi. They don't want to do anything that's going to alienate their fan base. Or conversely, as in the case of a lot of bands, they'll speak out about politics or they'll speak out about things that they know are meaningful to their constituency because they know that that helps them build equity for their fans. But, they all know that, I mean, Bruce Springsteen, the same fans that saw him in the Stone Pony and Asbury Park are in stadiums now. And they've been buying his albums and T-shirts for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that stay in your lane has a lot of application for people in the real estate business.
And any business, really.
It truly does, yeah.
So does your rock star background have something to do with the fact that you're wearing sunglasses today?
I'm incredibly cool. And, it's just the way it is. I may have been born with these on. I'm not quite sure. But, I raced out of the office today to come here and forgot my regular glasses. Now, everybody goes, well, that's fine. Just take off the sunglasses. And problem is that a motorcycle accident a long time ago dropped the right side of my body just a little tiny bit. So my eyes aren't level. My right eye is a little bit lower than my left eye. So I don't see things stereoscopically. When I take my glasses off, I see two of everything.
Mm.
And the problem with that is that after about 15 minutes, I get the optical version of seasickness. So when you're seeing two of everything, your brain is really struggling and wants it to be one, and so
well,
you start to get dizzy.
Well, I'm familiar with seeing double. It has nothing to do with motorcycles.
Nothing to do with glasses or motorcycles, yeah. So unfortunately, yeah, I'm going to have to do my rock star look today, so I apologize for that. But
no, it goes well with the theme.
It goes well with the theme. It's kind of a theme day, yeah.
I like it. So I have actually read your book. I like it.
Oh, you're the one.
I am the one. I'm going to write a review after
All right,
we're
good.
Done.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
So let's start off with talking a little bit about mindset. I had a training yesterday for my agents, And I focus a lot on mindset. And I think it's overlooked a lot of the time, especially in real estate, because you think of this as something where you execute rather than spend time working on your own mindset. So I want to touch a little bit on sure. why mindset is important and how you feel it impacts people's real estate careers.
So no rock star has the ability to not make music, right? They have to. It's like oxygen to them. And no real rock star believes that they're not going to be successful. It's like there's this thing in me that I have to get out there, and people are going to want to hear it. And, you know, you get somebody like Lady Gaga, for example. Lady Gaga's record company wanted her to be like a little pop diva. And, you know, same as you know, yeah, I don't know, Andrew, whatever. Anyway, you know what I mean. But they wanted her to do like a pop songs. And she said, no, that's not me. I have something to say. And she, even though she didn't have millions of fans, she had a name for them, her little monsters. And she could see the future. And she said, nope, I'm not doing that. And now she's Lady Gaga. And I think with any true rock star, anybody who is truly inspired, from the get, they can see it. Bruce Springsteen's record company thought he was going to be another Bob Dylan. They thought he was going to be playing acoustic guitar and singing folk songs. And his first couple albums are sort of like that because they're very story-ish songs. You would not confuse Bruce Springsteen with Bob Dylan. But so I think if you're an agent, having that sort of belief in yourself and understanding who you are and what it is your contribution is to this business is really important. And I don't think enough agents know who they are. You know, statistically, everybody knows six real estate agents. Mm-hmm. And to the world at large, they all look the same. And if you want to prove that, look at their social media feeds. They look exactly alike. There's nothing that differentiates them. Mm-hmm. Whereas Bruce Springsteen, Steve Tyler from Aerosmith, David Bowie, Lady Gaga, they're just them. They're the only one. They're the original. So right. when you see that, what I'd like agents to take away from that uniqueness is who you are. And also, you got into real estate. I don't think you got into real estate to sell all kinds of houses to everybody everywhere all the time. I think you liked something about it. Maybe it was mid-century. Maybe it was mansions at the beach. Maybe it was horse properties. Go with that. Go with that.
So I think, especially with newer agents, I think that is one of the pitfalls is they think that they need to chase every lead, work with everybody, sell and buy all kinds of homes, and they have a hard time defining a more narrow area to work in. And I think the real success stories that you see are truly people who embrace who they are. And they understand that part of that is not working with everybody, and not everybody will like who they are. But the ones who do are going to be loyal.
And I also think that, you know, agents are like a dog with a pork chop. You know, ever try to take a pork chop away from a dog?
No, I wouldn't.
It's not advisable. they're like a dog with a bone. And, you know, once they sink their teeth in, it's like, that's mine. They have this horrible sense of loss, that the FOMO in agents, and, you know, they're terrified by it. Eric Clapton, they asked him how he could play, and his nickname was Slow Hand, right? So he wasn't this, you know, blah, 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 that kind of guy. He said, the notes that I don't play are as important as the notes that I do play. And the space between the notes is what gives the music emotion, right? So when you think about that, I think, okay, the clients that I don't take are probably as important or more important than the clients that I do take. Because if I'm specializing in mid-century modern and somebody comes along and wants to buy new home construction in Palmetto, it's taking time away from mid-century modern. And what I should do is I should just hand that off to somebody who sells new home construction in Palmetto and take my referral fee and go get myself two more mid-century modern clients. Mm-hmm. Like, what you give away, I mean, I've given away $25 million worth of business. And because I don't want to do it. It's not my jam. Mm-hmm. It's not what I do. And I don't want to have to learn about Palmetto, and I don't want to have to learn about this builder, and I don't want to have to take all of that time learning about that thing over there that I don't do.
And we'll probably never need again.
And probably never need again. Mm-hmm. And I don't build a reputation. I don't become the go-to person for horse farms, mid-century, you know. What? That's what you need to do. You need to be the one who people say, oh, you're going to buy a beachfront house. You got to talk to Joe.
So let's say you refer a new construction out to another agent. Isn't it highly likely that if they get a client who's mid-century modern, then and they know that that's what you do, that they're going to refer somebody back to you?
If they don't, I'll burn their house down and shoot their dog.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, so, I mean, but no, you do. You build these relationships. When I was working in North Carolina, I would never, ever, ever sell a house at the beach, ever. I don't know how to do it. And, you know, riparian rights and literal rights and tides and, you know, how big's the thing, all that stuff. I don't want to do that. And I don't want to deal with the EPA because there's all sorts of stuff that goes on when you're selling homes near the water and that kind of stuff. So I had all these guys at the beach and, you know, all the different beaches in North Carolina. So I'd have all these folks at the beach. And anytime they had anybody who was buying something in Raleigh, I was the guy. Just default. Because they know that the second part of Rockstar Real Estate Agent is something called APR, Authentic Personal Relationships. Most rock stars know everybody they've ever met. They're still in touch with them, right? Seriously, they stay in touch with everybody because they know everybody is a potential conduit to not only buying their music and promoting their music, but also to more fans. Mm-hmm. I mean, fans have to grow somehow. And the way fans grow is, I saw this great band, you have to see them. I saw this great. So you build your business predicated on how you treat the people in your industry, whether it's other agents, whether it's clients, whether it's mortgage people, whether it's home inspectors, whatever it is, whether it's the dreaded appraisers. But, you know, how you treat people is how you're going to end up being treated. And it's a small business. There's 400 people in the real estate business. They just keep changing jobs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a small business. So you have to make sure you look after people.
So let's take that idea about building a fan base. How do you build a fan base in real estate?
Well, one of the easiest ways is to find a niche, find a lane. Look, if you wanted pizza, okay, you wanted to have a pizza, but all the signs in front of places that sold food said food, right? That's all. You go out and you want Chinese food, you want hibachi, you want pizza, you know, barbecue, whatever, that's fine. But all the restaurants just have a sign in front that says food. And you go on their website and they say, we have food. Have some that's real estate agents.
Right.
Food. But in the real world that we all live in, if you open a restaurant, you sell pizza, you sell ice cream, you sell barbecue, you sell Korean, you sell barbecue, or you sell Korean barbecue, or you sell Southern barbecue. Niche down. And that's what you need to do. Coca-Cola doesn't sell caramel-colored, bubbly, sweet beverage. Coca-Cola sells joy. If you ask them what they sell, they will tell you, we sell joy. But even they niche down. So Sprite is for a certain demographic. And super sweet sodas are for another demographic. Mm-hmm. And no sweet. So in order, I think, for you to build a fan base, first of all, you have to find an audience. You have to find people who like that. Because it's so much easier if you want to do marketing and advertising to say, okay, I sell luxury homes. So where am I going to go? Walmart? Probably not. NASCAR? I don't think so. The ballet? Yeah. The symphony? Yeah. The art gallery? Yeah. The boat show? Yeah. If you're selling yachts to people, they're not going to buy them from you at Walmart. Mm-hmm. Walmart folks are nice, and if you're selling new home construction in Palmetto, Walmart's your go-to. And I think all of a sudden it becomes so much easier for you to find and build a fan base when you start to make it smaller. Mm-hmm. So now you know where to go. Where are the people that I want to build a reputation with? Where are they? So I'm going to fish where the fish are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm going to go where they are. And then you're dealing with a smaller community, so it becomes easier for you. My friend Angela Rowe, who wrote the foreword for the book, she's the mid-century modern queen. She's in the Raleigh area. But she's so into mid-century, and she now does tours in other parts of the world, airplanes full of people going someplace. The modernist hired her to work with people. And what people don't realize is a mid-century, there's mid-century modern homes, and then there's like old ranch houses. You know, they're two different things. Mm-hmm. But, and I see a lot of agents, they get a ranch house built in 1965 and they say mid-century. No, it ain't. Mm-hmm. And if what you do is you undermine your reputation and credibility for people who know mid-century modern homes by telling them that an old ranch house is a mid-century modern house. Mm-hmm. Because if you say it's mid-century, you better know who the architect was. You better know what period he built in, because was it before or after he met Frank Lloyd Wright? You know, mid-century people are a snooty little club, and they are, but they're cool, and I like them, and, you know, they're my peeps. But they're a small club. In the same way as horse farms, in the same way as beach communities, you're going to sell in a beach community you've never been to? Are you nuts? You don't know anything about it. And the thing that really bothers me about that is you're doing yourself a disservice, but you're doing a huge disservice to your client. How dare you get a client for a mid-century modern house and not know anything about it? And here you are Googling in real time, mm-hmm. when you're walking through the house. You can't do that. So if you want to build a constituency, if you want to build a fan base like Bruce Springsteen, you play at the Stone Pony in Asbury Park and you play your music. And the people who are there like your music. You don't put flyers on the cars in the parking lot at Metallica for your new Bruce Springsteen album. Mm-hmm. Because they don't care about their Bruce Springsteen album.
Right.
So find the thing that you naturally gravitate to. What is it that you like? What kind of real estate do you like? Learn everything you possibly can about it. Hang out with the people who like that too. Build a reputation based on that, and then suddenly anybody in town, two things. Number one, they either have a relationship with you and they say, if you're going to buy or sell a mid-century house, you know, you have to talk to Angela, or they're terrified of you. They're scared to death of you because they know that you know everything that they don't. And I have in my little niche used that to, my niche was money. I didn't have a specific kind of real estate, although I kind of gravitated toward luxury and mid-century and the things that I like personally. But my niche was money. And I'd say to people, look, I don't know what shiplap is. I have no idea what color your kitchen should be. But I know everything about which houses are going to appreciate better, what's going on with the bond issues in town, like all the things that are make it valuable. Are they going to build an airport or a high school in your backyard? I know all that stuff. Things are going to affect the value of your property. So my client base was very much those people.
The numbers guys. Yeah.
But if you want to build a fan base, identify a lane, identify some niche, and then really throw yourself into it. Get to know it. It makes it easier to market. It makes it easier to, because they will do your work for you.
And you can self-proclaim too when it comes to that. You self-proclaim and then you learn.
That's it.
So something that you brought up, which I find really interesting, is just inserting yourself into the group of people that are within your niche, right?
Right.
And so a lot of people and a lot of real estate agents are terrified of doing that because they're intimidated by, you know, inserting themselves into a group. And I always tell people that it's just a conversation. It's just relationships. And they shouldn't have any other objective when they go in. They shouldn't have, oh, I need to make X amount of appointments when I go to this event or something. Or their only objective should be to talk to people and be fun and for them to like you.
Yeah, and it's interesting. People have a tendency, especially salespeople, have a tendency to want to build themselves up when they talk to people, when they talk to new people or they go to a party or something like that. So they have a tendency to want to tell people about themselves. I'm the worst at that I have to say, shut up. But because everybody wants to be liked. And especially if you decided, okay, I'm going to be the horse farm person. So, you know, the equestrian center, because I rode a horse when I was 8. But I want to get into that crowd because they have a lot of money and, you know, they do cool things. And it also trickles down because, you know, the people who were buying equestrian centers also were buying real darn nice houses. So they have a tendency to want to talk about themselves. When you ask someone, what are people most interested in? They're interested in themselves.
Right.
So your job, when you go to one of these new events, is to interview them. Just pretend you work for a newspaper. Mm-hmm. You know, just ask them questions. Hey, what about this? What do you think about that? What's your opinion on this? What's your opinion on that? And they will build a strong opinion about you based on your interest and respect of them. If you tell them how swell you are, they're going to think you're a conceited goof.
Uh-huh.
And the conversation will last 2 minutes. People will talk about themselves for a month.
Right.
They'll just they'll keep refreshing the champagne and just talk. People love to talk about themselves. And if you don't learn about them, then how in the world are you going to sell them anything?
True. I don't look at real estate as sales. I, in fact, always tell agents that you are not in sales. I find it amusing when you find a real estate book that starts with you're in sales. You're not selling a damn thing. You're just facilitating a transaction.
Right.
So if a buyer comes to you and wants to purchase a home, you don't go into a home and sell the home. The home sells itself. If they like the home, they want to buy it. You don't have to be pointing out features of the insanely cool backsplash or the shower head.
Unless the backsplash was installed
by me.
By you. And then it becomes then it becomes a selling point. It goes into listing and there you go.
And just for reference, I did a backsplash, my very first backsplash week. I know. I'm so proud of myself.
Done, yeah.
I will admit though that I had some help with the more complicated cuts, but I did the straight ones myself.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, the straight ones.
That's all that matters.
So I think that part of, I totally lost my trail of thought.
Well, you were saying that, you know, that it's not a sales business.
And it's not a sales business, right.
And you're right, because at the end of the day, a buyer could buy a house from a seller without you. They don't need a real estate agent.
So the question is, what's your added value? Firstly, understand that you're not there to point to the house and say, buy this. They'll either like the house or they won't. Nothing you say, it's not like a pair of jeans. It's not an impulse buy. I always tell agents, you can tell somebody they look skinny in a pair of jeans and they might buy it. You tell somebody they look skinny in a house, they ain't buying it.
No.
So it has to be, the house has to be the right fit. And you're kind of irrelevant in that equation. Where your added value comes in is when you do find the right home for them, and you can be good at, you know, picking out homes they might like just based on working with them. But when they pick the house and it's very much them picking it, then your added value becomes being able to negotiate a deal that they probably wouldn't get without you, and then facilitating the transaction through all of its different twists and turns and hurdles to get to the finish line. That's your added value. You're a facilitator. You
right.
don't call the shots. And I always say it's never about you. If you enter a real estate transaction thinking it's about you, you're already in the wrong ballpark.
Right.
It's never about you. It's about them finding the right home, purchasing it, or them wanting to sell their home to the right buyer. In that scenario, you are a little bit more in sales and marketing. But when you're working with buyers, you're certainly not selling them a damn thing.
You're not. And, you know, to sort of take it back to rock stars, one of the things that rock stars guard as jealously as they possibly could is their image, who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, you seldom, if ever, see somebody, one of their marketing people, going off and doing something without the band being involved. And if they do, they may not last. Sponsorship deals were one of the toughest things because, you know, they wanted to do all sorts of stupid stuff with band. Well, why don't we get them wearing a hat? And no, we're not going to do that because then, and trying to, I'll give you an example. Budweiser sponsored the Rolling Stones tour. And they had these big banners connected to the stacks, the, you know, PA stacks. So what they wanted to do is they wanted to have these big banners, and when the first note of the first song, the banners would drop down, and there'd be big beer bottles and big beer cans on both sides. Don't do it. And I was negotiating with August Bush IV, who was the son of the guy who was running the place, and that's August Bush is like the guy, the Bush family, Bush beer, whatever. So I was negotiating with him, and he was kind of negotiating for me with his marketing people. And I said to him, don't do it. It will be a disaster. And so he came back to me and said, look, they really, you know, they want to do it, and they're allowed to have signage and whatever, whatever. I said, well, okay, fine. We'll let them do the first one. I said, but watch what happens when the banners come down. I said, it's going to be the low point of your day. Okay. Banners dropped. Everybody started to boo.
Yeah.
Throwing stuff at the thing. Because what fans want from sponsors is cheaper tickets, enhanced experience, more tour dates. Take that money from Budweiser and do something that benefits me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do something. I need to get something out of it.
Get me a cheaper beer at the event.
So same thing when you're an agent in a transaction. Your value add. What is it that you bring to the party? So Budweiser comes to the party and good things happen. But I don't want it in my face. So you come to the party as the agent. I'm going to get you a home inspector. I'm going to help you find a mortgage person. I'm going to make sure that everything's working the way it's supposed to. I'm going to negotiate you a good deal. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. Not about me. I'm just like, you know, it's all you. And the funny, I don't know if you experienced it, but the funny thing for me was that really taught me it's not about me. I would take a client out and, you know, we will have been going out and working together and looking at this and that for a while. And by the way, we should mention that I did on the ground real estate business for like 14 years. So I've been in the trenches. I know what it's like to get shot at. But I would, you know, be working with them like for 2 or 3 weeks, and we'd down to the final 5 houses, and I absolutely positively knew which one of those 5 houses they were going to pick. And I was wrong every time. Every single time I picked the wrong one.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It's so personal.
I always pick the right one.
Oh, no. I was so far off the market.
This may be a personal problem, Joe.
It could be. Well, you know, I've been married 3 times. But you know, I think bottom line is that you can never think that you've got it nailed.
No.
You can never think it's about you. You're absolutely right when you say that. It is not about you. You are simply there to make sure the car wins the race, the driver's simply getting it where it's supposed to go.
Right. And I always tell them, they're in the driver's seat, I'm in the passenger seat. And I will do what they ask me to do, yep. And I will make suggestions. But they're ultimately the ones always making the decision.
But you always want to have that little thing, though. You know, that little sort of thing you keep in the background. Especially now, when buyer's agents are having to justify themselves. It's not automatic anymore that you get a chunk of the commission. But I think, you know, I always used to do the subtle little stuff like, listen, absolutely, you're in control of this thing. You just walk right across the field. You're leading the way. However, it is a minefield, and I do have the map. So you always want to have that one little thing to kind of hold back. It doesn't sound like bragging, but it's just basically, I'm going to let you do this whole thing, and I'm going to make sure nothing bad happens.
Yeah.
And then you're fine. And that is what you're doing.
And it kind of depends on the buyer, too. I worked a lot in luxury real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And I always found it amusing when we were, I worked a lot on the buy side with luxury. And we'd be standing around at the property with the listing agent. And I always found it amusing when the listing agent had an attitude problem. And I'd be there and I'd look at them and go like, there's only one person here who can afford to buy this house, and it ain't you, and it ain't me. So let's just give them that.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the times you're going to hear agents talk about how they educate their buyers, which is all fine and dandy if they're educating a first-time home buyer through the process of purchasing a home. But if you're working with a multi-million-dollar buyer, they don't need your education on how to buy a home. They could handle that all on their own. They're using you because they want to delegate and they don't want to deal with it.
Right.
And they only use the best people, so they use people who know what they're doing. But they're doing it to save their own time and to focus on their niche, which right. is not buying or selling real estate. But you have to deliver every time. And you have to understand that you're not there to educate them on or be patronizing. If you come across as patronizing to somebody who makes 100 times the money you do, it's going to come across real stupid.
Yeah, and you're dead.
And you're dead.
Because they and you know, I've seen agents in luxury get their egos a little bit ruffled because they are the help.
They are the help.
And, you know, I learned customer service from Bruce Springsteen and Barbara Streisand and Tom Jones. I learned customer service from people who haven't. If you were to say to me, I want an elephant outside of my house at 8 o'clock in the morning wearing a pair of pajamas and a Boston Red Sox baseball hat, and you went out of your house at 8 o'clock in the morning and it wasn't there, you probably wouldn't even look because elephant pajamas hat, you know, whatever. If Mick Jagger looks out the window and it's not there, his initial reaction is he's stunned. He's astounded. What? How can it not be there? Because everything I say happens.
Right?
And so how can that not happen? And
here
then,
I am thinking how to make it happen. Like this right. is where my dreams
are. And but then comes the tsunami of, you know, and why didn't it happen? And who didn't make it happen? Whose
right.
job was
Who's
it to make it happen? Who's to blame? So I think it's the same thing that if you, you know, if you're given a task by especially someone in that rarefied air. I had a young agent. He had been in the business maybe 6 months, I guess. And, you know, he'd done a couple little transactions of, you know, new home construction stuff and little places. And he called me. He was all excited. And he said, I have a multi-million dollar client. Somebody wants to buy a house. And I think it was $2 million. And that was in Raleigh in those days. So $2 million was a lot of money. And so I said, well, great, good. I said, what are you doing? I said, oh, I got a meeting with him on Tuesday and I got a presentation. And can you go over my presentation with me? I said, yeah, okay, great, fantastic. And so we got to the end. I said, by the way, I said, when you go into the kitchen, what appliance brand do you think you're going to find? And he just paused. He went, Whirlpool, Frigidaire? I said, uh-huh. I said, ever heard of a Wolf stove? Viking? Sub-Zero fridge? I said, look, here's what you need to do. Here's John's number. You call John. He sells luxury homes all day long. And you are going to partner with John. And you and John are going to go to the presentation because A, you'll get it. B, you'll know what you're doing. C, you'll be in business next week. And so knowing your limitations, understanding that you again, can't do everything. And my point to him was you may hate luxury.
Mm-hmm.
You may absolutely hate it, not want to deal with those rich, crazy people. But the only way to find that out is to have a successful transaction and to see, or you may love it. And if you love it, then you do more transactions with John and you partner up and you make us, you know, even making 25% of a big commission like that is a lot of money. So I think that, I think at the end of the day, you, as you say, you know, agents who say they're going to educate, you really need to be careful because if somebody wants to educate me about something, they better know more about it than I do.
Right.
Otherwise, it's going to be a really short conversation.
Exactly.
I'll be pleasant, but I'll be gone.
Yes. And that is the point of it. Which brings me to the next topic, which is confidence. And so let's talk a little bit, and I think you touch upon it in your book a little bit about how mm-hmm. to build confidence and how to own the room and how to come across as being confident and yeah. why that is so important.
The worst advice that anybody can ever give to anybody is fake it till you make it.
Right.
Worst advice in the world because there's something called imposter syndrome.
And there's something called smelling the bullshit.
And there's something also called smelling the bullshit. But there's something called imposter syndrome. And imposter syndrome is that dream that you have of you're out in the world and you're naked, right? You're exposed. And it happens when people, even highly qualified people, have this dream and they have these feelings of inadequacy that, you know, I'm not really as good. And I mean, you know, people are getting their PhD theses and things like that. They have that dream, you know, the night before they're supposed to do their presentation because they're freaking out because of the pressure. If your persona and if your engagement with the world is not based on your authentic self, who you are, what you know, education you do have, and being the person who, if they say to you, what about blah, blah, and you say, I don't know, but I'll find out, and then find out. But don't BS people.
So I teach newer agents to apply what I refer to as throw yourself under the bus tactic, which means instead of saying, I'll find out, you just flat out tell them that's not even something you handle. That's handled by somebody with a ton of experience in that area.
Perfect.
I don't do that. What I do, what I'm really good at, is XYZ.
Right.
So giving that piece that they caught you on that you didn't know about, instead of saying, because you might have I'll find out as an answer to a lot of things once they start going down that path. For example, let's say you've got a brand new agent, they haven't done a single transaction, they're showing homes, and they start asking questions related to the contract process. What I teach agents to do is say, listen, I don't even handle the contracts. That's handled by somebody with more than 15 years experience. I'll find out the answer from them.
Yeah.
But once we find the house you want, they're going to take over and they're going to negotiate a deal like you've never seen before. What I'm really good at is figuring out your taste, keeping an eye on the market in real time, and finding you the home that you're going to fall in love with. That's what I do.
Right.
And so you kind of give it away, but you take it back. You give yourself a meaningful role instead of just throwing yourself under the bus and dying.
Which is, you're authentic.
Right.
You're telling them exactly who you are. I mean, the great part with me is that I've been a, like, for everything else that I've done, Rockstar Business, and I worked in video games for a while, I worked in baseball for a while, but everything I was doing, I was always writing. So the cool thing was that when I was actually in my job where things mattered, then I would say things like that. And then I could go and write fiction and just lie like crazy and just make stuff. He needs a boat and I'm just going to write one in here. But I think if you misrepresent, you have a problem. Now, North Carolina's Real Estate Commission, for example, they are brutal. I mean, they are like the state police of real estate commissions. And if somebody came to the real estate commission, it's so easy to file a complaint. Like that, boom, and there it is.
Yeah.
And if somebody came to them and filed a complaint and said, they said that they knew how to sell luxury homes and they didn't and they misrepresented, the real estate commission in North Carolina would look at that as misrepresentation. You might say, well, it was just my first client. They don't care if you didn't have, and you know, you as a person really need to be that person. You have to be comfortable with who you are. And if you want to be better, get better. But don't pretend to be better.
Right.
So, you know, what you said is absolutely true, that if you want to integrate yourself, you want to start going to the yacht club to find clients.
I like to go to the yacht club.
Well, there you go. But if you go to the yacht club and you pretend you have a yacht, you're in trouble.
Can I say I'd like to buy a yacht? I don't want to drive the yacht.
You don't have to, driving a yacht, that's like, what was the movie?
There's gotta be somebody.
Wolf of Wall Street. No, the Wolf of Wall Street, driving that yacht. No, but I think you can be a yacht enthusiast and go to the yacht club, right?
Right.
So you don't have to have a yacht. You don't have to know everything about yachts. You can go to the yacht club and interview people about yachts, and they'll talk about their yacht for a month. And that's really what it comes down to, that if you want to start integrating yourself into these new communities, whatever they might be, mid-century modern, luxury, the beach, whatever, just go and ask people questions. And they'll completely forget about the idea that who is this person and what do they want? What do they want from me? Whatever, whatever.
And that goes to the basic rule of they need to like you.
They need to like you.
They need to trust you.
So there's a trick, Wolf of Wall Street. There's a trick that people call some guy's listing is expired, right? So he's getting a call from every real estate agent in, you know, four counties to try to get his listing. And, hi, it's Joe, and I'm calling from Keller Williams. And I went, well, he has an immediate reaction of danger, danger, Will Robinson. you know, salesperson, and all he or she is thinking about is how do I get this person off the phone?
Right.
So immediately, so you have to get past that. You need to get past that first gate. So the way you get past the first gate is to call and say, hi, Bob, Joe Owens, Keller Williams. When you go up at the end of it, Bob goes, do I know this guy?
Oh, I've tweaked that. Do you want to hear mine?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, is this Joe? Hi, it's Christabel, Realty One Group. So I'm like confused that they didn't know me, but I'm so enthusiastic to say my name like they should know me. So I put that upwards in the end of it.
Were you introduced by their boss? Were you introduced by their neighbor? Are they going to be embarrassed somehow? And what you and that's the jab. And then when you come with the right cross, it's the reasonable request from the reasonable man following immediately, which is, listen, can I ask you a quick question? And they'll say yes. Because they're stumbling. You know, you staggered them with the jab.
Yes.
So now you got past the first gate, and then the second gate is, and, you know, obviously we could talk about, you know, cold calling and things like that. But I think in any situation like that, just be who you are, be engaging, smile, laugh, whatever, interview other people, get them talking. If you think about awkwardness, you know, and say, okay, well, if I go to the symphony and there's somebody standing there, how do I approach them? You're at the damn symphony.
There's no more smoking. It was so easy to ask for a light back in the day.
Yeah, I know, that's unfortunate, but still. I lived in a building where Gene Hackman and Al Pacino lived in New York City, and I used to see them in the gym every morning. And Pacino was easy. He would just talk to anybody. But Hackman, who I wanted to talk to, was a little bit more distant. He was, you know, just kind of on his own. He would smile and whatever. So I talked to my dad. My dad was a painter, artist. And I said, Gene Hackman, he studied with so-and-so. He was a Russian painter. He did blah, 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 blah. Okay, great. So I go in the gym like a couple of days later, and Mr. Hackman's there. And I said, sorry to bother you, but my dad said that you studied with, boom. Half an hour later, I'm still talking to Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
And all it is if you go to the symphony, just make sure you know about Mahler. Make sure you know about Tchaikovsky. Make sure you know a little bit about this orchestra playing of that. And you can walk up to anybody and say, you know, I just read that they're doing a really nice job here tonight.
Right.
Boom. There you go. You're in. Because you've added value to the conversation. You've told them something that maybe they didn't know that is connected to what's going on. And plus the fact that you've engaged them about something that they obviously care about because there they are.
Well, and getting them to talk about something that's easy for them to talk about is really the trick. So if you're making cold calls, I always tell people, ask them simple questions that they know the answer to 100%. Mm-hmm. So instead of asking them, what kind of home are you looking for? Where they might stumble and go, well, I haven't decided yet. You know, I'm not sure. Ask them about the home they currently live in. They know how many bedrooms it has. They know how many bathrooms it has. They know what conditions it's in. Yep. They know. Ask them things they already know about. And then they will get comfortable and they'll start talking to you because they like to talk about themselves.
And I always used to ask people if they were coming in. And a lot of people came to North Carolina from out of town. I'd always ask him to send me pictures of the house they lived in now.
Right.
Because that's probably the house they're going to buy. But, you know, we're talking a little bit about mid-century modern housing. We're talking about, you know, yachts and the symphony and stuff like that. I also used to go to the supermarket and get one item and stand in the 1 to 10 items line and strike up conversations with people. And I'd wear my little badge.
Yep. The badge can be very effective.
Yeah, and I'd stand there, and there were two places. I'd go to the supermarket, and I'd just keep going back, and the cashiers knew what I was doing, and they always used to help me out. So I'd go, I'd be standing there, and it'd be a beautiful day. I'd say, oh, man, it's really a great day. I've been out showing homes all day. It's in, and then the cashier would say, oh, this guy, it's the best agent in the neighborhood.
Oh, that's boom. So awesome.
Done. And then you have that. And the other place you go, again, which is not the symphony or the yacht club, is you wear your badge and you go to Lowe's or Home Depot and you go to the mulch area because if people are buying mulch, they're either selling a house or they just bought one. So you got a 50% chance of that are actually going to sell a house. So, and you know, and people, 7 months out, they're thinking about buying their house, and they don't talk to an agent until 3 months out.
Right.
So get in there early and get your licks in.
Do you know statistically, though, like they take forever to decide to sell, or but when they have made that decision, do you know how many hours it takes before they select their agent?
No.
Statistically, 48.
Really?
So you don't have a whole big of a, like once, it takes them forever to get to that window.
Right.
But once that decision is made, they're going to very quickly decide who to work with.
And, you know, again, it's an interesting thing because when we talk about getting new business and sort of landing new business, and I'll tell you in a minute about my lead generation system, which is the best lead generation system in the history of mankind. It's how Noah got the
and
animals.
Why? Because it's simple.
Well, it's deadly simple.
Yes.
But this
business.
I think in the whole idea of, you know, building an audience and getting people to sort of come to you, it really all is predicated on that reputation that you want to be able to build, because that 48-hour window, what you really need is things that will support you. And so whether it's the cashier who says, you know, he's the best, but it just becomes so much easier if you make your world smaller. Just stop and just dedicate yourself to, I am going to do new home construction houses. That's going to be my jam. And that's all I'm going to do. And I'm going to learn everything that anybody needs to know about every one of these builders. I'm going to learn everything about, you know, Bradenton and Palmetto and you know, what's the chapel. I'm going to learn all about all this stuff and know more about it than anybody else in the area. I am going to be the absolute best ever. I am going to be the Leonardo da Vinci of agents. And you really have to think about that. I mean, you really have to believe I am going to be absolute best real estate agent for new home construction in the Tampa Bay area, period. They will write songs about me.
And then you learn.
And then you learn.
And then you learn.
And you learn because through the process, you learn. So just by simply doing it, you're gonna learn more. That's, like I said before, there's no rock star that has that music in them that is ever not going to make the music. They may not be successful,
but they're still making the music.
But they're going to make the music. But, you know, you remember this, that the band who stayed true to what it is, who they are, and the kind of music that they make, they're either, you know, the one-hit wonders or they're playing stadiums. But the band that can play rock and ska and reggae and country and whatever, they're playing at the Anderson wedding at the country club this weekend.
Yes, they are.
Because, you know, either you dedicate yourself to what it is you're doing and you find that one thing you do better than anybody else and then you leverage it like crazy to a successful
career. And something
you
love to do.
Well, you know, the other thing too, here's the biggest part of this. What we talked about a minute ago, how do you build a fan base? One way you build a fan base is by doing exactly that. And if you're a real estate agent, you really don't want to lead generate for your whole career. You want to lead generate for like 3 or 4 years. And you want the following 10 years
to be referrals,
to be attractive. And so that's the whole point of the Rockstar Real Estate Agent. I'm going to teach you to stop chasing business and start attracting business. That's what you need to do. You need to develop a relationship and a reputation in the market so that people view you as, this is the best slice in town. This is the best pizza in town. And there are, in every category of food, there's the best. Mm-hmm. And that's where everybody wants to go. And the only reason that you don't eat there is because you can't get a table.
Right.
It's the only reason you don't go there. And it's a big deal. So, because nobody likes lead generation. Although, like I said, I have the best lead generation system in history. And I used it to sell $400 million worth of corporate sponsorships. It wasn't developed for real estate. It was developed for corporate sponsorship sales. And it's simple. You make 15 phone calls a day. That's it, 15. Not 300. You don't use a dialer. None of that nonsense. You make 15 phone calls a day. I don't care who you call. Call your mom, call your brother, your sister, your friends, whatever it is. When you start out doing this, and all you want to do is out of the 15 calls you get, want to get one sit, one meeting where somebody agrees to have a cup of coffee with
you. Can it be your mom?
Be your mom. Absolutely. When you start out, because it's a self-correcting system. Mm-hmm. So what happens is you start out, and about, I always find about 2 weeks in, that my person will come back to me and they'd say, well, who do I call? I don't know. I gave you the system. It's not my job to figure out who to call. And what they do is they figure it out. So, and I told you this story before. There was one girl who, in the real estate business, who figured out, you know what? The pizza guy probably would like to meet the guy who makes pizza boxes. So she got the pizza guy and the pizza boxes together. And didn't sell them on real estate, just thought they should meet. And that was her whole thing. I got the guy who makes wheels and the guy who makes tires, and they should probably get together because, and she became the queen of the city. Anybody who needed anybody to do anything came to her, and nobody would buy a house with any other agent for fear that she would not work with them. Because because if I don't buy my house from Rachel, I ain't going to get any pizza boxes.
Right.
And she figured it out. And they all figured something out. They all figured out some way. And all the agents that I found. And it's really simple. Because you make 15 phone calls a day. You get one sit. Five sits a week. I ain't even going to make you work Saturday and Sunday. It's five sits a week. Out of the five sits a week, get one client. That's 52 new clients a year. Mm-hmm. If you close half of them, that's 26 transactions. The average real estate agent makes $6,000 on a transaction. It's a lot of extra dough. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard. Anybody can make 15 phone calls a day.
Right. Well, I think that this is kind of an interesting point, is the simplicity of real estate as a business, the simplicity of lead generation.
Yep.
Why do so many people fail? I always tell people, real estate is not complicated. It's not complicated at all.
No.
But the key to being successful is consistency.
Right.
And so let's talk a little bit about that, because this isn't rocket science, right? I always tell people that there's things you can control and things you cannot control. You cannot control somebody's timing. That's out of your hands. What you can control, and the whole key to being successful in this business, is to stay in front of them and to be in front of them when their timing component falls into place. That's it. That's all you have to do. And then you have to be likable and develop relationships.
And there's one other but that comes with that. And you probably would have gotten to it if I had shut up and let you talk, which I'm not good at. But
two of us.
It is. You have to stay in front of them, but you have to stay in front of them with value.
Yes.
Drip campaigns, stuff like that, no.
That's the other thing that I say is, don't contact somebody asking if they want coffee.
Right.
Don't contact them asking how they're doing. Send them a piece
of
real
estate.
And God
forbid, don't contact them and say, I'm just checking in or following up.
Just
never say those words.
Don't use the word just in any
ever.
Shape or form.
No.
Especially when you're calling, even if it's a lukewarm lead, and you start with, I'm just calling because, you're already diminishing your value by
right.
a mile.
And
be confident that they want to speak with you.
For me, it was always, if you sort of come out of nowhere after 3 months or 4 months or whatever, which you probably shouldn't have done anyway, but if 3 or 4 months down the road you come and you say, hey, I just saw that a house like yours down the street sold for X, want me to run a quick CMA for you.
Exactly. And that's what I tend to do, just because I'm awkward with the whole let's have coffee all the time type of contact. I would always make it about real estate. So even if I knew that they were not currently looking, and even if I couldn't for the life of me find a property that met their criteria, I would send them something that was close.
Right.
So for example, I would email somebody and say, hey, I saw this pop on the market the other day. If it only had a pool, wouldn't it be perfect? Well, they'll look at it. They'll acknowledge that I remember that they want a pool, and that's a deal breaker for them, because you got to make sure you're coming across as listening to them and not just sending them random stuff.
But what you've done is that it doesn't look like you've prodded them to do a transaction because somebody just went through their database and they needed some business because they're having a slow month. It's enhanced your value that you remembered the pool.
Right.
And so, again, you've and to go back to the rock star analogy again, consistency is most important, and that's what keeps rock stars awake at night. How do I not be a one-hit wonder? How do I meet or exceed the success of my previous album?
Mm-hmm.
You have to. Because if you don't, you know, and
then you're gonna flop.
You end up in the where they now been. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is important for you when you're having, and I always tell agents, look, just understand, they're not your friends. They're not your friends. They are clients, and you have to treat them as such. You can't treat people you're doing business with as your friends. They may become your friends down the road, but I watch agents get way too familiar with clients during the transaction. And it always reminds me of that old joke of the defense attorney when the guy gets convicted. And he says, what are we going to do now? And the attorney says, you're going to jail and I'm having lunch. And because the reality is that you have to keep distance in order to remain objective, and you have to be objective in order to do the best job possible.
This is actually a reason why some people don't use their best friend who is a realtor to buy or sell a home.
Right.
Is a couple of reasons. One, if you are best friends with your realtor, they tend to deprioritize you because they think they have the flexibility to do so.
Right.
So they will prioritize a third-party client that they have no relationship with because they think that you're going to be more forgiving to them when you are not giving them the attention that as a professional you should be giving them. But because it's a friend, you get more slack, right?
Right.
And that leads to problems. And I've had numerous clients over the years whose best friend was a realtor, and they just decided they were not going to work with them because they knew that with me, they would get 100% professional attention at all times because we were not friends. And some of them became friends and some of them didn't, but they all remember you after the transaction
and
you do it well.
It's an interesting, that's a really interesting minefield too, because on the one hand, when people would sometimes say to me, look, we're buddies and I can stand losing a house, but I can't stand losing you as a friend. And I would always say to them, if you don't use me as your agent, you're guaranteed to lose me as a friend. There's no question. And if you don't use me as an agent, you will lose the house. But what I did, and you know, I tried to have that relationship with clients. Now, if they were somebody brand new, different conversation. I was always very professional. Although black t-shirt and blue jeans is what I've always worn, so they never got fancy. But one thing I would always do, though, is if they would tell me, if they would say to me, well, you know, so-and-so is my friend, but I'm not going to use them because, you know, I don't want to run that risk of losing them as a friend. I would call so-and-so, especially if I knew them. I would call so-and-so and say, I want to pay you a referral fee on this thing. I want to give you a couple of bucks on this deal because I know that they're your buddy, but I know why they're not using you, and I think it's only fair. So if you can help me out during this, and you know, I'll just bounce things off you, and then I could go back to the client and say, look, here's the thing. I called Judy, and I told her that you had told me that, you know, your friendship is more important than this whole thing, so I'm going to give her a 25% referral fee, and she's going to help me out to make sure that I stay on track with you guys. They were my client until death because they believed that I cared more about their well-being than my money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're the little things, again, authentic personal relationships, because that's who I am. Like that, what I just told you is who I am as a person. So little things like that, that the investment of $3,000,
well, you get a client for life, as you pointed out. So
and I have all
this
of their
is a
friends
long-term
too.
Play. That's
right.
The other, and that's probably going to be the last topic we're going to touch upon is how real estate is a long-term play and how the agents who failed to see that.
Yeah.
Because it takes a little bit of time to build a pipeline and to build a career and to build conversion. And where agents fail is they get antsy and they're right there. The conversion's about to start. And then they give up. So how do you see real estate? Like what kind of commitment, what kind of mindset do you have when you're entering it to be successful and to not be disappointed.
Well, the stats are against you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, 80% of real estate agents fail in the first year, and that goes up to 87% in the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. And the horror of this business is that you, 20% of you in real estate school are actually going to be able to make a business out of this in the first year. It's so expensive to make that business, or if you don't make it, you probably have a maxed out credit card to pay off. Then you come into the brokerage and you realize that in the brokerage, 20% of the agents are doing 80% of the business. So that means that, you know, 80% of you are going to fail and only 20% of the business is available to you. So you need to think about how in the world, like, how does this work? And it goes back again to what we've been talking about, which is I need a strategy. Mm-hmm. And if I try to do the same thing as everybody else here, I'm toast. Mm-hmm. So what can I do that makes me special? How can I become special?
Well, also, if you're trying to be a top producer, if that's your goal, then you can't do things exactly like the 95% are doing things. It's just not going to work.
Nope. And it's, and you know, it's funny because, and I have, and, you know, just in the context of having put this book out and talking to people, I go on social media, and one of the first things I say when I talk to a room full of agents is, okay, here's what I need to know. How many of you, and you have to make a choice here, want to be A, a successful real estate agent, or B, a social media influencer? Which would you prefer? Because if the communication that you're giving me and everybody else through social media isn't value-added information that is useful to me in terms of buying or selling property, then I don't even see you. You don't even exist for me. If all you want to do is be number 700 of the new TikTok that everybody else is doing their own little version of, trust me when I tell you, you ain't no Brad Pitt. So you ain't your little...
The younger ones don't even know who that is.
Who that is, exactly. Oh, right. Lord. So you ain't no Ryan Reynolds. But the bottom line being that, look, if you're going to do things, you have to decide who you are, what's your authentic personal self, and then you have to add value to that. So all the things that you're doing in terms of marketing yourself, as you say, if you just look like everybody else. Because when a new song comes out, when Bruce Springsteen comes out with a new song, every other band in the business doesn't make a copy of it.
No.
Right. It's Bruce Springsteen. It's what makes him unique. And if you said to Metallica, are you going to cover the Bruce Springsteen song? We're Metallica. What's wrong with you?
Right.
So don't copy what everybody else is doing. Otherwise, you're just like everybody else.
Right.
You know, and if you're going to copy the latest TikTok video, then make it your mid-century. Make it your beachfront. Make it your luxury. Make it your equestrian thing. Take that jam and stick it into your thing and make doing it in your thing you. But, I mean, you've nailed it. If you're not unique, if you don't give people a reason to do business with you, they won't. If you just look like everybody else, it's like looking out the window when you drive along in a car. That's all you see. That's real estate agents.
Whizzing by.
Yep. And just everything looks the same.
Well, and with that comes the notion that you have to be okay with the fact that you are not a good fit with everybody and you don't need to try to be. So if somebody does not like direct communication, they're going to hate working. I could adapt for about 5 minutes and then something happens and the filter comes off and they're going to realize that I'm very direct. Mm-hmm. And so I prefer to be upfront about it. And I am who I am. And if somebody is offended by direct communication, you can go find another realtor. It's right. Fine. And so, but the ones that do like it, they value it. And that's kind of one of those things that sets you apart is be authentically you. And some people will love it, some people will hate it, but the ones who love it will be enough to build a business that will last.
But what you just said, too, is really, really the key to that whole thing, because I have it in the book, too. I have a little thing, and I still work with clients. I mean, you know, I said to friends, I'm going to get out of doing that because I'm going to save lives, because if I have to show one more house, somebody dies. But I have what it's like to work with Joe. And I have a meeting. I say, okay, before you sign that, this is what it's like to work with me. And I tell them. And I've also gotten into relationships with people, and I've started working with clients, and like I'm in it for a week or a week and a half, something like that. And I'll sit down and say, look, this isn't working. And you know, George Costanza from Jerry Seinfeld, it's not you, it's me.
Right.
But you know, whatever it is, that don't be afraid to, if it isn't working, tell them.
Right.
Tell them it's not working, and I can recommend somebody to you, but this is not a relationship. Because you have to be willing to walk away from the thing that's not in your lane and refer it off to somebody else and get some money from it. You have to sit down with somebody and tell them this relationship just doesn't work.
Yes.
And I have, but I know another agent who would be a really good fit with you guys. And so long as you've been upfront with them and you hadn't gotten snippy or petty or anything, mm-hmm. it just hasn't been working out. It's been a little bumpy road. Better that you go to them and say, look, I have somebody I think would be a better fit with you because our personalities just, you know, this ain't working. Would you like me to put you together? And then give them the person that you know will do it.
Usually when that happens, though, it's when it's happened to me a few times during my career, it's been when I've been applying the no asshole policy, which I'm very strict about. Mm-hmm. And I could not think of anybody I hated so much that I would refer that client to.
Oh, so, see, I always had somebody that I hated. Me also, so. Usually that was a very long list, oddly enough. Anybody who had ever beaten me in a negotiation, hey, you'll meet Bob. But I think, again, you know, we've kind of gone through this. What makes Springsteen Springsteen? What made the Beatles the Beatles? What makes, you know, Justin Bieber Justin Bieber? Is the fact that there are no copies.
Yes.
They are who they are. And they are 100% that person. And Bieber, like, you know, love him or hate him, here's what I got.
Right.
You don't want it? Don't listen to it.
And he evolved. He evolved.
He did.
A lot. And he became a different version of himself, a very different version of himself.
But, you know, and he did a really cool thing. I mean, when everybody else was hiding under the bed with, you know, paper towels during COVID, he rented the roof of the Beverly Hilton Hotel and did a New Year's Eve party with everybody looking down for them. He did smart stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that knowing who you are, staying in your lane, doing what it is that you were born to do. Realize when it's time to hand something else off and don't try to be, you know, something
everything
that you're not.
Everything to everyone.
Right. Well, even our pal Gary Keller, with whom I disagree pretty much everything. even with him, he said, and I think I quoted him in the book, you can't be everything to everybody. You have to be everything to one body.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important that, right. You know, you have to be confident enough. You talked about that, your confidence. You have to be confident enough that you're good enough at what you do to make a living at it so you can hand stuff off.
Right.
And also realize that if you do what you do really well and build a reputation for it, you'll attract business, so you're never going to have to chase business.
Right.
You know, it'll come to you. Angel is a classic example. She has so much business coming to her now for Mid-Century, she can't handle all of it. She has to hand it off.
Right. Well, I think that is a great place to conclude. Just be you. Be authentically you. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from your book.
Actually, the biggest takeaway for me is I don't know how I got here because you have a no-asshole policy. I'm wondering how I slipped
you
through that.
You faked it.
Oh, I faded till I made it. Okay, great. Well, then everything's fine because I'll wake up naked dreams tonight. So there you go.
Well, thank you, Joe, for being here today.
Oh,
it's
really
been
fun.
An absolute pleasure. And we'll have you on again soon.
Okay, we can.